Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, Ashley Abbott will be telling us a little bit about Bailey's Butterflies. So, can you tell me a little bit about Bailey's Butterflies?
Sure. So, Bailey's Butterflies for Turner Syndrome is a nonprofit that myself and family and board members created. Our daughter, Bailey, is actually the one who was born with Turner Syndrome, so we just did a play on words with our organization's name. We created it or established it in 2018. A few years prior to that, we had hosted some fundraising events for national nonprofits, and when we were, you know, doing these events and raising the amount of money we were and the turnouts at the events and the awareness, we thought to ourselves, you know, we're raising money and the awareness is great and, you know, giving to these national nonprofits, but we kept meeting so many families in Florida. And we wanted to be able to give back to them personally. So we said, let's create our own nonprofit and give back to these families. So that was kind of how we started Bailey's Butterflies for Turner Syndrome. We hosted our first event under that name in 2018. And other than not doing one last year because of COVID, we've raised over $100,000 since 2018.
So, what sort of support do you offer to the Turner's community in particular?
Sure. So, our mission statement or our goal is to provide resources and support for girls, women, and families affected by Turner Syndrome through our awareness, education, and our events. And so, we have sponsored families, nine in particular, to attend the annual Turner Syndrome conferences. They're in different areas of the U.S. every year. They move it around. Whether they've been newly diagnosed children in their families or adult TS women who had never attended or never even met another Turner Syndrome person, this has allowed these families and these women to network with other families and physicians on a national scale, and to learn about the advancements, other support groups, clinics, treatments that specialize in TS care. We also have a partnership with our local clinic. It's the University of Florida Turner Syndrome Center, which is at UF Health Shands Hospital in Gainesville. So we aid in their efforts to enhance the clinic, anything that they need, whether it's having somebody input data or it's materials for the clinic, because they do crafts and meet and greets and lunches and things like that for the families when there's clinic. We donate to the national nonprofits as well, because that's kind of how we got started, so it's good to give back to them. We give back to the Turner Syndrome Society of the U.S., and we give back to the Turner Syndrome Global Alliance. We've also partnered with the Turner Syndrome Global Alliance on the Insights Registry, which is a national project that is supported by a Red Cap program. This project is to develop and use standardized templates to capture patients' information, and in return, it will assist the advancement of Turner Syndrome research and care.
So, do you ever encounter any myths or misperceptions about Turner Syndrome in your work?
Oh, all the time. Some of the myths or misconceptions that we have come across is people will ask us, you know, is there a cure or what's the treatment? Well, there's no cure. It's you're missing part of an X chromosome, so there's no way to fix that. And medicine and research has come so far over the years that girls and women nowadays with proper medical treatment can live normal lifespans. They can live normal lives. Years ago, their lifespans were shorter because they didn't know about some of the medical treatments that could help them live a longer life. So I feel like that's the biggest misconception, is they don't believe that they can live a normal life. And I hate to use the word normal. We've tried not to use that with Bailey, but it's kind of one of the things that comes up a lot is, well, is she normal or is she going to lead a normal life? Well, of course she is, because we don't treat her any different. We don't want Turner Syndrome to define her. It's just part of who she is, and she has to learn to embrace it and make the best of it and teach people about it, because that's how people learn and get to know you as an individual.
So in that sense, as a parent, what are some of the coping strategies you've taught her to use over time?
We've always been very open and honest with her having Turner Syndrome from the time she was little. You know, you can scale down the information that you give them to their level. And so we've always let it be known to her that she has it and that this is what we do. This is the medical, you know, this is why we go to so many specialists. This is why you take growth hormone injections every day. And there has been some moments where she's like, why me? You know, why does this happen to me? And we just try to tell her, you know, as a parent, like, everybody's different and everybody's created differently. And this is your different. And you have to make the most of it. It's as she's gotten to be a teenager, she's now 13. I feel like now is one of the most difficult times because middle school is tough and kids can be mean. And so it's just coping with those skills and just trying to teach her to be a better person and to be the bigger person, I should say. And you don't always have to react when people say things. We've always been very open and honest with her from the beginning that she may not be able to have children because we don't want it to be a surprise to her later in life. And it always bothers me when parents say, well, you know, my daughter's however old, you know, she's a teenager and she doesn't know she has Turner Syndrome, because there's going to be a day where they're going to regret their parents not sharing that information, and there could be some resentment, and we didn't want to face that.
So, in your time with Bailey's Butterflies, has there been any success you've seen that stands out for you?
Our success. I feel like our biggest success as Bailey's Butterflies has been our partnership with the Turner Syndrome Global Alliance and our, you know, our contributes to the Red Cap program and the Insights Registry. This is a big thing, and so it has its potential to capture so much information from patients all over the United States and possibly even globally. And so I feel like that is our biggest success, is being able to do this with them and to contribute for that, to that reason.
Right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
In this segment of our show, Jessica Corcoran will be telling us about the ECD Global Alliance. So, can you tell me a little bit about the Global Alliance?
Absolutely. So the ECD Global Alliance, we're an advocacy group. Let me say that over. The ECD Global Alliance is an advocacy group. We're dedicated to raising awareness for Erdheim-Chester disease in providing support to the patients that are affected by the disease. We educate the medical community with materials and with collaborations. And we also advocate for and financially support research for Erdheim-Chester disease.
So for those who might not be as familiar, how does the disease typically affect a person?
So Erdheim-Chester disease is actually a rare blood cancer. It's a very rare blood cancer and was only deemed a cancer in 2017. And what it does is it makes an excessive production of a specific cells that normally fight infection, but these cells are actually, they're called histiocytes. So these histiocytes infiltrate the connective tissue in the body, and it causes inflammation, and then that tissue becomes thick and fibrotic. So this can be anywhere in the body, so that makes it a little bit more complex for the physicians to diagnose. Most commonly, you'll see pain in the long bones, which would be in the legs or the arms, bulging eyes. They have balance and speech issues. They have excessive thirst if they have diabetes insipidus, which is a common comorbidity. They have shortness of breath. They have extreme fatigue, and then sometimes they have fevers and night sweats. So that's the original signs of the disease, the most common ones. It affects fewer than 2,000 people worldwide, and it's mostly adults between 40 and 7 years old that are diagnosed, but we have also seen children as young as 2 years old. And it's 60% male, 40% female is usually the general percentage of genders affected.
So, how do you go about reaching out to the patient community to let them know about your work?
So, we have a website, of course, and our website stays up to date with the most current information about Erdheim-Chester disease. We also host annual meetings, and now we're doing regional meetings in response to COVID. So we bring the patients together in a multitude of ways, just drawing them in either through Facebook or word of mouth from their physicians. We work with over 1,000 physicians across the globe to assist them in treating patients with ECD and also educating them. So when they find a patient or have a patient come to them, they refer them to us that way as well. And so, but mostly it's through our website.
So, do you ever encounter any myths or misperceptions about ECD?
So, ECD is, like I mentioned, it's very complex. So, and what I mean by that is there's no test for Erdheim-Chester disease. You can't go and just take a blood test or a urine test or even a simple MRI. So you have to have several factors when you have a diagnosis. And so it has to have, the biopsy has to come from the affected tissue. The clinical symptoms and signs that the patient is experiencing you have to factor in. And the pathology report, of course, is important, and the scans. So the scans of the body are a very big clue to finding a diagnosis. So that makes it a little difficult and different than other cancers. It's more complicated to diagnose. The other misconception, I think, is that it's not as bad a cancer. I think some people think it's maybe not as complicated to live with, but it's very, very much not the case. So these patients don't look sick. So what I mean is they may still work. Some of them, still talk normal. They walk normal because of the involvement that they have. You can't see that they're sick. So that makes it difficult for them to get disability coverage or to get just to have people understand what they're going through. So, you know, some of our patients definitely have more involvement in their neurological or their CNS involvement. So sometimes they'll have slurred speech or they'll walk differently. Sometimes they'll look drunk, they say. People think they're drunk. Or they're in a wheelchair, unfortunately. So that's a smaller percentage that you can see that they're ill. So for the guys that have, you know, have involvement, you just can't see it. It's difficult for them.
So in your time with the Alliance, have you seen any success in the movement to promote awareness and better advocacy for those affected?
I'm sorry, did you ask me a question, Cameron?
Yes. I was wondering, in your time with the Alliance, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
Yes, we have had tremendous success in different areas. Most notably, we've been able to secure an FDA-approved drug in the United States. And so there are 7,000 rare diseases, and only about 5% of those diseases actually have an FDA-approved drug. So that tells you a little bit of how important and how difficult it is to achieve. So that was a momentous occasion for us, and we're very proud that we were able to help with that clinical trial that led to the approval. And so that's one of the most notable, but you know, we've been able to secure and manage an entire care center network across the globe, where it's basically pulling together the major medical institutions that are familiar with and are experienced with the disease. And they actually directly treat these patients, but they also offer the consultations to the physicians that are less experienced. So that's a very important part of what we do as well.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need for ongoing research and understanding of this condition, what would you say?
So while the awareness for this disease is improving, the education is improving, you know, the proof is in the statistics for medical journals. We're seeing more patients getting diagnosed. The struggle is, even though that time is getting shorter before that patient finds a diagnosis, it's still 5 to 7 years from the start of a person's symptoms to the time that a doctor can actually pinpoint that ECD is the cause of their illness. So by this time, a patient could actually see a lot of permanent organ damage, and it's irreversible. So this can be detrimental to their recovery and to their ongoing care. So while we have successful treatments and we have the FDA-approved treatment, it's not a cure. So we still have to keep trying to raise awareness, and we have to research as much as we can about this disease, not only for these patients, but for other more common cancers. You know, our cancer is only affecting fewer than 2,000 people in the world, but this research that we're doing is important for everyone. So the more knowledge you have, the better. So, you know, we'd love to see one simple test for this disease. You know, like I said, it's very difficult to diagnose, and we want it to be simpler for physicians and the patients, for them to be able to get that treatment sooner. So, you know, that's our hope for the future. Obviously, we want a cure. One day, that's what we hope for.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure, yeah.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Think you've heard it all? Think again. Indian beatmaster Ritesh Das brings you the latest sound exploration with Japanese taiko, Macedonian folk, and Canadian rock icon Biff Naked. You've got to hear it to believe it. Juno-nominated Toronto Tabla Ensemble's new album, For the Love of Tabla, is out now.
Freedom, run through me, like the sacred river.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Jessica Corcoran told us a little bit about ECD, and Ashley Abbott told us a little bit about Bailey's Butterflies. In this segment of our show, Barbara Inslee will be telling us a little bit about the Rare Trade Hope Society. So, can you tell me a little bit about the society?
Yeah, so I founded Rare Trade about a year and a half ago, and that was a couple of years after my daughter was diagnosed with spinal glucosaminuria, what we call it AGU, and that's a fatal neurodegenerative disease that's usually initially diagnosed as being on the autism spectrum or ADHD type of diagnosis. In her case, it took about 7 years to be diagnosed. So when she was diagnosed and I realized there was no treatment and no cure, then of course I started doing all of the research that I could to see how we could at least treat the disease, if not cure it. That took me to a Rare Trait Hope Fund down in Louisiana, and I connected with the mom of two ADU boys down there. And she had set up her charity also to fundraise to do all of the preclinical work for a gene therapy that we hoped would actually cure the disease. So I jumped in and opened up Rare Trait in Canada. At the time, my daughter Makeda was the only child in Canada diagnosed with this disease. And we set out to support the Rare Trait Hope Fund to fundraise for this gene therapy clinical trial. And that's essentially what I've been doing for about the last 18 months.
So, since the inception of the society, how have you been reaching out to the patient and medical communities to let them know about your work?
I've spoken at a number of different fundraising events. I spoke recently at an mRNA, a lipid nanoparticle seminar, which is sort of, it's not gene therapy, it's a different type of treatment that can potentially be helpful for rare diseases. I have spoken to them, and then of course, as other people have reached out, other parents and groups have reached out, I've spoken to them as well.
So, how have you been able to support parents of newly diagnosed children with this condition?
Essentially it's to see if they want to join our fundraising effort. So right now we have about 8 AGU families globally that are fundraising for this gene therapy. So anytime, some of them have found my Rare Trait, some of them have found Rare Trait US, but as a group we've connected, as a group of parents in order to fundraise. But it's mostly, as we've done our fundraising, sometimes that will hit the desks of people who know friends or family who have been diagnosed with the disease, and they'll pass the link on. It's extremely rare, so it tends to be sort of a word-of-mouth referral. But our goal is to bring these families into our group of fundraising families to try and find a cure.
So, do you ever encounter any myths or misperceptions about AGU?
Well, I don't think anybody has really heard of it until we talk about it. As I said, my daughter was the only one in Canada at the time who was diagnosed with the disease. So it's about educating people as we go along.
So if you could see anything added to what's available for the patient community at this point, what would it be?
The biggest thing that we need is money, obviously, for, we have a viable treatment that is well underway. The medicine for these kids is actually being manufactured as I speak. But we've had to, it's a very, gene therapies are very expensive. We're raising the money as individual families. It's really hard. I found it almost impossible in Canada to get fundraising other than through our GoFundMe or through people making donations to the charity. Because Makeda is the only patient in Canada and the clinical trial will be taking place down in the United States. So it's really been, it's impossible to get government funding, and it's just difficult to attract interest when it's such a small patient group. So my biggest concern is that we have a very viable gene therapy treatment with a vector that is well understood in the rare disease community, and a gene therapy process that's well understood in the rare disease community. And yet every family with every ultra-rare disease that goes the path that I am going has to start from scratch, and either themselves or with a very small group of families raise upwards of $5 million U.S. To create a viable treatment. And that part I really struggle with in Canada, how we could be in this place where we don't have adequate funding for research.
So to look at the converse side of things, have you experienced any success with the society that stands out for you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we've raised almost $400,000, in the last probably 14 months, which I think during COVID for fundraising is absolutely phenomenal. So I think people do care, and they do see that we're well on the path to getting this cured. The other thing is people understand that when they donate to us, that this is a type of gene therapy that is going to apply to a lot of other rare diseases. So they're not helping just cure one ultra rare disease. Ultimately, they're helping to cure a lot of other ones. So I think what we've been able to do is get the word out about the feasibility of gene therapies for these types of diseases and get people interested in funding them. So we've been able to get some foundations also interested in funding it. So I think we are starting to gather a little bit of momentum for the rare disease community as a whole, and I'm very proud of what we've accomplished to date.
So if you could send any message to those in power about the need to keep going with the research and the gene therapies, what would you say?
I would say that it's a global effort. Ultra-rare diseases, generally impact kids of about 150 to 400 or 500 around the world. And what we find is that any one country has such a small disease population, they don't want to fund it, or they don't want to do the clinical trial. And I think what people have to understand for these diseases is that it's a global effort. So the fundraising can be provided, it has to be provided by different countries, and it may fund the cure that's, the clinical trial that's taking place in a different country. So we really have to get our minds around having a more cooperative global effort to cure these diseases.
So where can people go to find out more about your work?
We have a website at Rare Trait Hope, so RareTrait Hope.ca, and you can donate there, and we can issue a tax receipt for it.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Very grateful, my friends, for Ashley's interview today. Fact is, I've delves a lot into the issue surrounding Turner syndrome through previous episodes. The fact that she is showing such love starting an organization to give back to these families in honor of her daughter, that doesn't mean her daughter has to see this condition as something that's going to hold her down in life. Good friend of the show, Stephanie Craig, has Turner syndrome, but she has such strength of character, has given so much to that community. It's just amazing to see people can not only live with any given condition, they can find ways to own it, make it their own. Fact is, it's not hopeless. It is about community and adaptation. For the fact is, we take steps each day with any given disability or condition towards a better tomorrow. We do this, we raise our voices and say, we should be counted. There's no reason this has to be the sole defining trait of who and what I am. You take what starts off as a very personal thing to you and your family. You say, we can make the world a better place for all those out there. You're building a bridge of connection. You're taking someone out of hopelessness, which, I must say, place many of us start off with a new diagnosis. It is not a place we're meant to stay. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.